Only one pasuk today, and you know, sometimes when a verse is a little difficult, then you end up with many, many, many different interpretations because it's difficult. So we have such an example today. In the first source, it says, "Ve'ele toldot Aharon u'Moshe b'yom diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai." Now, in the midst of this, you know, sort of surrounding this, is the census or list of the various tribes. And over here, as you can clearly see, even without my having bolded the words, first of all, Eile Toldot Aharon u'Moshe. And then immediately at least, all that we find is the Toldot of Aharon. But why would it have to qualify it? Ve'ele todot Aharon u'Moshe b'yom diber Hashem et Moshe, and the et over here is somewhat problematic. It should have, of course, been diber el Moshe, right? What does the et Moshe mean over here? Behar Sinai. Why is Har Sinai, which is a very nice location, why is that being introduced at this particular juncture as something significant, you know, for this census which is taking place over here in the desert? The Minchat Shai, now those of you who are not familiar with the Minchat Shai, I will familiarize you with it. The Minchat Shai is actually a real interesting work. I don't know if it is published independently, but it is published in the back of quote-unquote, a good Mikraot Gedolot. So therefore, by definition, if you don't have it, it means your Mikraot Gedolot isn't good. It's in a good Mikraot Gedolot, and he deals with different, sometimes, trup, different, sometimes if there are different spellings, and if there's any kind of intrigue within, as I said, spellings and other things like this, then he's going to be the one who's going to point it out. Over here, on the word et, Yom Diber Hashem et Moshe, he tells us, perfect. He points out correctly, not that I have to agree or not, but he points out correctly, Kol Dibur el Moshe. The Kol Tzivui et Moshe. Which means in terms of the what I would call the quote-unquote intrigue over here regarding the word et Moshe, he says this is a little strange because if you search all other times that you find God spoke, Diber, it's El Moshe, God speaks to Moshe, and whenever it's Et Moshe, then the word before is always Tziva, that God commanded. So over here, there seems to be something. They're supposed to have the phones go off a little bit later when they start to fall asleep. So that's far more helpful. The second pasuk continues, Ve'el Shmot B'nei Aharon, HaBachor Nadav, V'Avihu, Elazar, V'Itamar. So here, within a couple of verses, we have two different locations. We have the location of Har Sinai, we have the location of Midbar Sinai. Of course, you can tell me that they're not necessarily all that far from one another. We have a reference to B'nei Aharon as Kohanim, anointed Kohanim. So again, just think in your head, so when did that happen? That happens a little bit later down the line. And as I said, the main problem over here is the quote-unquote awkwardness of the phraseology within the first pasuk. And I'll read it again. Ve'ele toldot Aharon u'Moshe, these are the generations, or the progeny, of Aharon and Moshe. B'yom diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai, on the day that God spoke, now for the lack of translating, you know, any better, for the day that God spoke to Moshe at Sinai. I don't know, how else would you translate diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai? I looked at three or four translations this morning, and all of them made believe it said El. They all made believe it said El Moshe, that he spoke to Moshe. I don't know, I just don't know how you would translate. Et, by the way, is when he spoke with Moshe. Ed is one of these words which is actually very hard to translate.
Is that what people
that have,
you
say, I don't know. Ichves, gornish and gornish. When it says, Kaved et avicha ve et imecha, had it only said Kaved et avicha ve imecha, would it mean anything different? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So translate et. Who knows Hebrew? Go ahead, help me. Translate et. I don't know. Thank you. So you agree with me. You also don't know. I understand that, but what does it mean?
That's your problem.
That's my problem. I abdicate.
That's why you're there.
That's why I get paid the big bucks. Okay, I get it. There's a midrash which we'll see Rashi embraces. And then once we'll read the Rashi in a minute, but once we read the Rashi, then you'll see what bothered Rashi within the larger context here. The Eila Todot Aaron v'Moshe, source 3. Matzinu shechoshev l'todot Aaron ve'enu choshev todot Moshe. It says these are the generations of Moshe and Aaron. And then what do we find? Aaron and Moshe, sorry. Aaron's older, so Aaron is mentioned first. These are generations of Aaron and Moshe, and then all that it talked about was the children of Aaron, so therefore we have a little bit of a problem, and that problem is, what happened to Moshe's children? Why are they not mentioned at all? Now, truth be told, if you have Pasuk Kaf Zayin down the line here, which I happen to have in front of me, it says, Ulekahat Mishpachat Ha'amrami. Within the family, there was a family of Amrami. Now, what does Amrami mean? From Amram. So the Amrami family is presumably, again, when it's listing the Levian, now Amram had two sons. He had a daughter as well. We leave the daughter aside for the moment. I'm sure none of you mind. Let's talk about the two sons, the names of the two sons, Aaron and Moshe. Aaron was just now mentioned, so it could be that Moshe is mentioned, or Moshe's family is mentioned. But as I said, that is really further down the line, and this Midrash ignores this. The Ramban will pay attention to this, but the Ramban ignores this. Sorry, the Midrash ignores this, and it says instead, Matzinu shechoshev l'toldot Aaron ve'enu choshev toldot Moshe. We see that Moshe's children or progeny are ignored, and Aaron's are there. V'lama lo chashav banav, l'fi shahoyu banav nevi'im v'nechshavu im ha'levi'im. That's a little strange. Actually, it should... Excuse me? I mean, there are other midrashim. I don't think I included them here. There are other midrashim that ignore part of the verse and say, oh no, we're only counting people that were involved in the slavery in Egypt and Moshe's children weren't there. Why weren't Moshe's children there? They were in Midian. At which point Moshe's children came back is also interesting. In the beginning of Yitro, you have Yitro coming, but we don't know when that is. So he says, no, this list, as I said, another Midrash, I think it was Midrash HaGadol, says it's only listing people that left Egypt, and therefore, but of course, that's not what it says. What does it say? Eilu todot Aaron Moshe, biyom diber Hashem al Moshe, et Moshe behar Sinai. That the location of Sinai is not just the location, it may also be important chronologically. Yeah, any of you still with me? Continue. In the Midrash, in the second line, etat pirash todotav, davar acher, Lama nityachasu b'nei Aharon al shem Moshe? Why are Aaron's children included as if Moshe gave birth to them? Nityachasu ze yichus. What's yichus? As if they're his children. Eila told it Aaron and Moshe. Here are the children of Aaron and Moshe. And who does it mention? Only Aaron's children. But, sorry. So what about Moshe? So the Midrash is saying, no, these are the children of Aaron and Moshe. That means that the children of Aaron are also, in some sense, Moshe's children. Lefishahu lindem Torah, because Moshe taught them Torah. Umaleh, excuse me. Well, now you're really making trouble. Umaleha katuv ki ilu yoldam, and because Moshe taught them, it's as if he, in some sense, gave birth to them. And that, the Midrash is explaining why Har Sinai is over here. Because by Har Sinai is when Moshe learns, and therefore Moshe teaches them, and therefore in some sense they're considered as if they're his children. Loma miga ramla v'nashal aron shenikru al Moshe, ha-Torah shediber Hashem Moshe b'Har Sinai, mikana talomed shekola melamedet ben chavero Torah, maleh alav ha-katuv ki ilu yoldo. And from here you learn that anybody who teaches someone else's children Torah, in a certain sense is as if they are their children. So, okay. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know about you, but this midrash does sound a little bit forced. But nonetheless, take a look at Rashi. The Elu Todot Aaron Moshe, the fourth source. The Einu Maskir Elu B'nei Aaron. It only mentions Aaron's children. Nikru Todot Moshe, and they call the children of Moshe. Lefi Shalomdim Torah. Melamed Shekol Malamedet Ben Chibro Torah Malei Alak Vatuv Ki Ilu Yoldo. So Rashi completely embraces this approach. And again, apparently what concerns him is that it says these are children of Moshe and Aaron, and Moshe's not, children are not mentioned. B'yom Diber Hashem et Moshe, Na'asu Eila HaTodot Shelo, Shalom Dama Shalomad Mipi HaGvura. And therefore, what Rashi really has done is he solved the problem of why it says over here, Behar Sinai. Why is Har Sinai the location? But as I said before at the very beginning, when you have a verse which is difficult, you end up with all kinds of varied interpretations. The Rashbam points out, and this is a general rule he's going to tell us, B'yom diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai, shuzeh kodem hukam ha-mishkan, az hayu arba. And therefore, he's saying that why, again, look back for a second at Pasuk Aleph and Bet. These are the children of Aaron and Moshe when God spoke at Sinai. How many children did Aaron have then? Then he had four. What happened afterwards? Nadunaviyu died and said, Bamidbar Sinai, and then he's down to two. Now, continue in the Rashbam. Shizil kodem shukam mishkan. When did they die, Nadunaviyu? The day that the Mishkan was built. Right? The day of the Chanukat HaBayit. Shizil kodem shukam mishkan. Azayu arba. So therefore, the Rashbam is understanding that Eila told, these are the number of children, B'yom Diber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai. These are the number of children at the point that God spoke at Sinai, and then there's four, which means, I guess the problem is, you know, I got a book in yesterday, when was it? It was on Tuesday or Wednesday. Somebody called up to deliver something, I don't know what it was, you know, what they call these things, the, you know, these delivery companies, and I opened it up, and there were two books, and I had an article in them. Believe me, I had really no recollection that I ever, I didn't submit it, they must have asked me, and the most depressing book I've ever seen in my life. It's a book on death of children in Jewish community. I forgot the exact name of it, but no one should ever have to read this book, no one should look at the book. And it's, again, I hope the people published it won't be mad at me, but it's very depressing. It's just like chapter after chapter, it's just depressing. Hopefully, if somebody actually needs it, it will be uplifting. My article's good. Mine's the they put mine as the very last one. You have to go through the whole book. They have one from Rabbi Soloveitchik, because I can say we're co-authors in this collection. Anyway. But, you know, one of the problems, somebody loses a child and they ask you, how many children do you have? So what are you supposed to answer? What I originally have or what I have now? I mean, I had four, I have three. It seems like such a mundane and silly thing, but it's the kind of thing that goes through your head. Probably every single time somebody asks you such a question, you have to fill out a form, how many children? You mean originally or how many I have left? Right?
Have you had or how many?
Yeah. And it becomes such a horrific thing that's is the way that the Rashbam understands the problem over here. When you want to list how many children Aaron has, so what do you say? Does Aaron have four children? Does Aaron have two children? So therefore, the first verse, it says, these are the toldot by Har Sinai. So meaning, b'yom diber Hashem b'Har Sinai is going to explain the toldot of Aaron. At that point, it's four. But later on, b'midbar Sinai, it's going to go only down to two. So you have a very awkward problem over here. But by the way, even this is not the original. Could have been understood without throwing in the words Bahar Sinai, right? You could have just had the Elu Toldot Aharon. You can leave Moshe out completely of this verse. The Elu Toldot Aharon, right? Nadav Avil Azov Yitamar. Then it could have said Vayamat Nadav Avil Lifnei Hashem and so on. Which means, even with the Rashbam's explanation, which is a very nice explanation, there would have been a much easier way of saying it. I don't need Har Sinai over here. I don't need Diber et Moshe, which means even though I like his solution, well, even though I like his explanation, it's not a solution to the problem that we have. Agreed, or I lost you all already? Yeah? Lost or no? No. So, and then he gives us a general principle, which is good. Shekol makom shenemar b'har Sinai, zero kodem shukam mishkan, avo mishenivna o amoed lo nemar ela b'midbar Sinai. So that is now a real good rule for us to follow, you know, maybe to work a little backwards and to go forwards throughout Sefer Bamidbar, that he says that when, what's the difference when it says in a verse, Behar Sinai versus Midbar Sinai, one is talking about before the Mishkan is built, and the other is talking about after. By the way, I would have thought, or I could have thought, that when it says Behar Sinai, it means when Moshe is up on the top of the mountain. He's not necessarily saying that. Now, he made reference over here, which I skipped, in the end of the second line, it says, "Kamoshe pirashti lamala b'tchilat parasha," as I already explained before in the beginning of the parasha. So let's take a look when he says before. This is the Rashbam's explanation now on Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, right? There, the verse, you know, the book begins. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai ba'ohamoed b'chad b'chodesh sheni b'shana shenit l'tzeitami eretz Yisrael lemor. Beginning of the book. The Rashbam writes, "Bimidbar Sinai, ba'ohel moed l'chodesh hasheni, kol hadibrot shene'emru b'shana rishona, kodem shehukama mishkan, k'tiv bahen behar Sinai." Any time that God spoke to Moshe before the Mishkan was built, it's referred to as behar Sinai. So he's referring to Har Sinai as a location, but not necessarily in terms of the topography. What I mean by that, it doesn't necessarily mean he's at the top of the mountain when it says Behar Sinai, but that's the way it's described before the Mishkan is built. And then he says, "Aval mishehu kama mishkan be'echad l'chodesh b'shana shniya, lo ne'amar Behar Sinai, ela b'midbar Sinai, ba'ohel moed." Once the Mishkan is built, now the location is described as in the Midbar Sinai, in the ohel moed. Okay. V'chein mochiach lefneinu tiv elu todot Aaron u'Moshe b'yom diber Hashem Moshe b'har Sinai kodem shukan ha-mishnan. Az yu todot Aaron arba ve'elu shmot b'nei Aaron Nadav aviv Lazar. So if you actually look at this Rashbam here, it's a much clearer explanation of our problem even than the one that he said over here on the Pasuk, and he really sets it up very clearly. But as I said, it explains the more macro issue of Har Sinai versus Midbar Sinai, but it doesn't necessarily address our micro issue about why our verse is written in such an awkward fashion. Correct. And that as I said, the Rashbam is trying to explain that, I said, that awkwardness. How many sons does Aaron have? Does he have two or does he have four? So by Har Sinai he had four, by Midbar Sinai he had two. But as I said, that's a very nice interpretation, but it doesn't explain why the verse is written as awkward as it is. It could have said this in an easier way, I think. In source number 7, the Tor, by the way, over here it says the Tor... Probably. Over here it says the Tor Ha'aroch. There is the Tor Ha'aroch and Tor Ha'katzar. In most Mikrot Gedolot, you have the Tor, just as the commentary of the Tor, and the Tor Ha'katzar. The Tor never saw the Tor HaKatzar. He wrote the Tor HaAroch. I'm just trying to think a second. I believe it's Yaakov ben Asher. Asher was the Rush, but I think it's, you know, he had different sons, but I think this one is Yaakov. Yaakov ben Asher. So the problem was he wrote a long commentary. A good part of his commentary is actually reworking or restating of the Ramban. He's not the only one. Rabbeinu Bachai does the same thing, and some others as well. The Ramban was such a captivating commentary that a number of people decided just to paraphrase and to use it. So the publisher, again, goes back to the publishers again, published the Mikrot Gedolot, wanted to sell a new edition, so he says, "Oh, and I have the commentary of the Tor." But he cut out all of the Tor's commentary. The only thing he left was the Torah also threw in a couple of interesting gematriot. He he left in the gematria, which would leave somebody with the impression that the Torah just wrote a book of gematria. No, he wrote a book which is called the Torah. So over here it's described as the Torah Roch. You can buy the Torah today. It's a two-volume set. But as I said, as you learn through it, you'll find that, I don't want to give a percentage, but probably 70-80% is really reworking of the Ramban, which itself has value. Sometimes you get a line in the Ramban which isn't clear. So Rabbeinu Bachaye would be a good place to look. The Rakanati would be a good place to look. And the Torah would be a good place to look to see exactly how they may phrase the same thing, because sometimes when something's a little difficult, they may smooth it over. The Torah over here writes, goes back to what we saw from Rashi based on the Gemara. The Yeshma for Shim, B'minyan Yisrael v'Levi'im, K'tiv b'Midbar Sinai. There the counting is as it was in the desert of Sinai. U'v'Aaron tiv. Ve'elu todot behar Sinai. Lefi sha'aron nivchar b'mitzrayim she'nemar, halo aharon achicha ha'levi, aval ha'levim nivcharu b'midbar. That's a very interesting comment, but I'm going to say again the same critique that I have. And now you'll notice how rabbis try to fool us sometimes, myself included. What they do is sometimes you have a good question and you have a good answer or a good explanation, so you stick them together. So then you say, wow, that's really good, because that's an interesting point. But just because you take a good answer and put next to a good question doesn't necessarily mean that that answered this particular phenomenon. What he's pointing out over here is in terms of at which point does Aaron become selected. Now here we have to be a little bit more careful. Selected for what? At which point is Aaron a Levi? At which point is Aaron a Kohen? At which point is Aaron, right? So when Moshe and Aaron are going to meet up, you know, so here comes your brother. So what is it? How is it he described over there? He's not described as a Kohen at that point, but rather as a Levi. So, I mean, part of the explanation is that because Moshe hesitated at that point, then at that point he's a Levi, but now he becomes a Kohen, which, by the way, is not all that black and white. If you go back to the first source again, you're going to notice in Pasuk Gimel, Eile Shmo Bnei Aaron HaKohanim. Hamishuchim, Hashem alei adam lechahen, which means part of the issue over here is when they are already Kohanim. So he over here is pointing out that the rest of the Levi'im did not get elevated until after which point? The Chet Ha'egel. The rest of the Levi'im don't get elevated to a special role till after Chet Ha'egel. But what is the Torah claiming here? And he says he's quoting this. What does he claim? That Aaron was already selected beforehand, right? That's a real interesting point. But now you start thinking it through. Yeah, and does that really explain our verse? And the answer is, once again, it's not completely convincing. Source number 8, the Sfarno. The Eila told Aaron and Moshe beyom diber Hashem et Moshe. Be'et shehivdil et shevet ha'avilik, tzatam l'sa'et v'katzat l'sherto, u'levrech shemo, bichlalam ha'yu'az nadav v'havil. So he's saying is that the whole selection of Levi, and Levi, some were selected to carry, and some to put together the Mishkan, and some to bless, which means the whole selection of Levi, which includes the Kohanim, that was already at Sinai, again according to the Sforno. And therefore, at that point, there were four. So as you see, it's a similar problem to this four or two. But you know what I'm going to point out again? It doesn't necessarily explain why the verse is written the same way. I'm sorry if I keep repeating myself. Chizkuni, source number 9. B'yom diber Hashem et Moshe bar Sinai, kol zman shekadosh baruch hu nedaber Moshe bar Sinai, hayu nadav aviyu kayamim, avo meitu b'midbar ba'ol moed, shehaya b'midbar Sinai. I'm going to translate this, and you're going to tell me how you understand it. I'm going to translate as parav as I can, because there's two ways to understand this. One way is far more sinister than the other. The day that God spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai, the whole time that God spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai, Nadav v'Neviyu Kayamim, they were alive. But they died in the Midbar, in the Omoed, which was in Midbar Sinai. So how do you understand, like, actually that word Kayamim? Is it neutral, they were alive, or would you understand they were kept alive? B'yom diber Hashem Moshe bar Sinai. Kol zman shekadosh baruch hu nidaber im Moshe bar Sinai hu nadav aviyu kayamim. What does kayamim mean? The whole time that God spoke to Nadaviyu, they were around. Now, does that mean that they were kept around?
They were alive.
Kayamim, they were alive. So I'm going to ask you again, does it mean that they were alive or they were kept alive? Okay, you can leave out, you can think about that for a moment. Look at source number 10 now. This is the Teferet Yehonatan, or Yehonatan Ayvishitz. The Eila told that Aaron Moshe b'yom diber Hashem Moshe bar Sinai. Quotes Rashi, the Kasha. What was Rashi's explanation? Why they're described with as Moshe's children? Because Moshe taught them Torah. Anybody find a little problem with that? Vikasha, halo afilu kol diktei Torah ninu misinai piagru rak to amru lo yochanu l'shmo mpia esh abdola azot v'hotiniach b'shar Yisrael masha ein kein b'nadav aviyu ashikfar hi'id aleim akatuv v'yechazu et ha'elukim uve'emet heim hayu yicholim l'kabel kol pratei v'dikutei misinai. Now, he actually says something which is fascinating. Look at source number 11. This goes back to when Moshe goes up the mountain. Vaya'al Moshe v'Aaron, Nadav Aviyu, v'shivim izikne Yisrael. So you realize here that Nadav and Aviyu are selected. They're different from the other children of Aaron, and they make their way up the mountain, a place where the others are not. V'yiru et Elohei Yisrael v'tachat raglav k'maasei levnat asapir uke'etzem hashamayim l'tohar. There is some type of a revelation of which any type of translation over here will probably be inefficient. Then Pasuk Yud Aleph, v'el atzilei b'nei Yisrael. What does atzilei mean? To the noble ones. The El Atzilei B'nei Israel, the noble children of Israel, Lo Shalach Yado, God did not strike out. Shalach Yado means he did not strike out his hand. V'yechazu et Elokim, and they looked at God, V'yochlu v'yishtu, and they ate and they drank. So the question over here is, who are these Atzilei B'nei Israel, and why did God want to strike them? But he didn't strike them. This is a very strange verse. Now we'll go back to the Tferet Yonatan, he says that the rest of Am Yisrael did not understand the Torah themselves, and they needed it to come through Moshe. Masha'in came, b'nadav aviyu shekfar hi'id aleim hakatuv v'yechazu et Elokim. They looked. They understood by themselves. Which means there's some kind of direct revelation which Yonatan Ayvishitz is understanding as v'yechazu, they looked. Actually, therefore, he's saying that these Atzilei B'nei Israel are Nadav Aviyu. I'm going to skip a little bit. Zeya Ma'alat Moshe, okay, maybe I'll read the part which I skipped. K'ma shekatur Rabbeinu Olav Hashem ba'atzmo, d'bahim nistar atam liyuchlun mipei ha'esh agdola, ach nirad d'ita d'akadosh baruch haya, shonea tara im Moshe, l'shalishim ul'rvi'im, v'lo ha'elu, v'tamidi nishtakach imenu, ajna lo kadosh baruch matana, v'zeya ma'ala Moshe, masha'in kein b'nadav aviyu, shebemet sham'u, v'lo ho'il, ad shalom dam Moshe. They understood themselves, but they also didn't retain it until Moshe taught it to them. V'shapir muchach mikan, shekol ha'melameid ben chavir ha'tara, havi ki'ilu yodu, and here's the part which is chilling and frightening. Why are they called the children of Moshe? They deserve to die when they stood by Matan Torah. Why? Shehitzitzu bishchina. That they looked at the Shechina. The Midrash draws a parallel between Moshe and Nadav and Aviyu. What does Moshe do when he sees the burning bush? Before that, he hides. Moshe shows a great deal of humility in approaching something which is holy. Remember, the Sne and Sinai are the same, right? We forget sometimes. Moshe, it says, went to Har Chorev, Har Elokim, Chorev. That's where the Sneh takes place. Midrash actually says the name Sinai comes from the word Sneh. It's called Sinai because of the burning bush. The burning bush is a microcosm of a revelation. The macro is by Sinai. Moshe hides himself with a great deal of humility. Nadav and Avihu, look. What did it say? Now look back again at source 11. The El Atzilei B'nei Yisrael Lo Shalach Yago. God didn't strike them on the spot. Why should God strike them? What a strange turn of phrase. The Yechazuat Elokim. They looked at God. The Yechluvi Yishtu. By the way, on top of everything else, they were having a party and they were eating and drinking as they were doing this. So according to what it says over here in source 11, you know, in the Chumash, the Tiferet Yonatan finally comes around and says that Nadav and Avihu deserve to die b'yom matan Torah, shehitzitzu b'shchinah, because they looked at the Shekhinah, but what happened? Ach Moshe b'kesh aleim rachamim v'havi ki'ilu yoldam. That Moshe prayed for them at that point, and therefore they owed their existence now to Moshe, so he's saying, therefore, in a sense, they're like the children of Moshe at this point. By the way, this is, and I'm going to say it again. When you have a difficult verse, you get all kinds of interesting interpretations. Over here, what's he saying? The Eilat, read back into the verse, because it's very interesting what he's saying. The Eilat told it Aaron and Moshe, b'yom diber Hashem et Moshe b'har Sinai. These are the children of Moshe, of Aaron and Moshe, the day that God spoke at Sinai. Why specifically on that day is it considered to be the children of Moshe? Because at that point, Moshe gave them life. How did Moshe give them life? By praying to God, who wanted to strike them down. So as I said, this is certainly an interesting interpretation. Yeah, right. But by the next verse, it says, Ve'el atzilei b'nei Yisrael. And then it adds in, they did one more thing. Ve'yachazu, ve'yachlu v'yishtu. They looked, and they ate, and they drank. Okay. But it says, El atzilei b'nei Yisrael. So that's already more limited. By the way, what does Moshe do when he goes up to Har Sinai? He doesn't eat, he doesn't drink. So if you hear, again, Moshe doesn't look, doesn't eat, doesn't drink. They look, they eat, and they drink. But you just get the sense, a very different approach. If I had to say it, I would say this is a young generation, a little bit more forward, a little bit more. Chutzpedik, I'm sure. I'm glad you said that. Okay. Source 12, the Ibn Ezra. The Eilat told out Aaron and Moshe, Hatam shelo holidu b'neihim v'lo hosifu b'neihim. The Ibn Ezra just now turned into Moshe by Har Sinai is the second time, it's after the Chet Ha'Egel, and this is where Shevet Levi gets chosen. So therefore, in a sense, what Ibn Ezra is doing is he's connecting Pasuk Aleph together with Pasuk. Okay, he then continues, V'kashehu kama mishkan amar Hashem pikod epinei Levi, v'ashchina v'mishkan, alken ketuv b'midbar Sinai. And again, it gets back to the same kind of problem about at which point you're counting. The Ramban in source number 13, I told you about a little bit earlier, v'yizkir zeloma ki b'yom dibar Hashem ha-Moshe bar Sinai nivcheru, elu l'mishcha otam, u'liyot lehem mishchatam l'kunat olam, b'shar shev, lo nitzavar b'vchirato ad ata. V'tam yizkir toldot Aaron u'Moshe b'makom hazeh, ki kasher hishlim yizbar kol Yisrael l'toldotam, l'veit avotam v'tzadzkir toldot shevet Levi, hitchil b'roshei shevet ahu. So again, he's claiming that they just want to start and count all of Levi, and they're going to end up with Moshe, as I said later on, when he speaks about Amram. Okay, let's look at the Kli Yakar. And he raises something which I intimated a little bit earlier. These are the descendants of Aaron and Moshe. Rashi said, why Aaron and Moshe? Why consider children of Moshe? Because Moshe taught them Torah. So he writes, V'kasha, V'imkein, kol Yisrael toldotav. If that's the case, Moshe taught everybody Torah, so why are they being selected? Kilu kulam li made Torah. V'od lama chazar v'amar, eil shmo b'nei Aaron, v'lo iskirat Moshe. And why is Moshe left out? V'nira li lefi shenemar. It seems to me that because it says, Uva Aharon hit anef Hashem ma'od lahashmido. Now this is a pasuk that we've studied a couple of times, and it's a very scary pasuk, because we don't know about this until we get to Sefer Devarim. What is it that God says? Sorry, Moshe says, and God was extremely angry at Aharon to the point that he wanted to kill him. Now, you know, sometimes when we read through the Chet HaEgel, you almost get the feeling, not just Chet HaEgel, a number of episodes, you almost get a feeling that Aharon is like this Teflon person, right? Aharon and Miriam both speak Lashon Hara, and Miriam is the one who gets punished, nothing happens to Aharon. Aharon builds the Chet HaEgel, builds the Egel, and he's around the whole thing, nothing happens to Aharon. This doesn't necessarily continue, by the way, because Moshe hits the rock, and Aharon gets punished. So at some point, you have an inverse taking place. But there's, as I said, a frightening pasuk, which only we learn about in Devarim, where Moshe says, let's look at it again. V'hitanaf Hashem ma'od l'hashmido. Let's look at the pasuk itself. Perek Ted, pasuk Kaf, in Sefer Devarim. Ki agarti b'nei ha'afa, chema shekotzaf Hashem aleichem l'hashmid etchem. Vayishma Hashem Eli Gamba Pamahu. God listened to my prayers not to destroy Am Yisrael. Uva Aharon hitanaf Hashem ma'od l'hashmido. And God was really angry at Aharon and wanted to destroy him. Ve'et palel gamba ad Aharon ba'etahi. And I also needed to pray for Aharon at that point. So Moshe is telling something that we did not know when we read it in Shemot. What's he telling us? That God was ready just to wipe Aharon out, to kill Aharon at that point. And it was Moshe's prayers that kept Aharon alive. Now keeping that pasuk in mind, the Kli Yakar continues. He says, and what was the word which was used? Lahashmido, hashmada. What does lahashmid mean? Larog, labe, lahashmid. What's lahashmid? So listen to what he says. Va'amar, nearly lafisha ne'amar, fourth line. Uva'aharon hit anaf Hashem ma'od lahashmido. That God was very upset and already wanted to destroy him. Ve'ein hashmada ela kilui banim. Hashmada means to take away his children. K'moshe pirish Rashi parshat Ekev, as Rashi pointed out in Ekev. V'ho'ilat tfilat Moshe l'chatsa'in. And Moshe's tefillah worked 50%. Nimtza sh'oton shnei banim sh'itzil Moshe b'tfilato dome ki'ilu yeldam. The two sons that Moshe saved, it's as if those are the ones that owe their lives to Moshe. But Nasu Toldotayim B'yom Dibar Hashem with Moshe Bar Sinai. When Moshe prayed after the Chet HaEgel, when he goes up the second time, Bar Sinai. Those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, let's go back and explain this. Rav Yonatan Eifshit says that I'm purposely going back to Rav Yonatan. Rav Yonatan Eifshit says that it says that these are the children of Aharon and Moshe, and then it lists four children of Aharon, two of which then die. So Rav Yonatan Eifshit says, oh, those two that died, they should have died immediately, but Moshe kept them alive. Meanwhile, that's not the review. Over here, what the Kli Yakar is saying is the opposite. All four children of Aharon should have died as part of his punishment. Aaron's family should have been wiped out. He should have been wiped out with no remembrance. What does Lahashmid mean? Lahashmid means wiped out with no remnant. Where is he basing this on? That's what Rashi said. When you talk about you say hariga, you killed somebody. What's hashmada? You've wiped out the line completely. So therefore, when it says that, when Moshe tells us later on that God wanted lahashmid the family of Aharon, that means Aharon and all four of his children are supposed to die. So over here it says, but Moshe prays to God, lo lahashmid. Now how much have to survive so that there's no hashmada, there's no destruction, even if one survives, even if two survives. So what is the Kli Yakar saying? That Moshe's tefillah only worked 50%. Who did he keep alive?
Eleazar
and Itamar. So therefore he's claiming that, what's Bahar Sinai? Again, Bahar Sinai is a place, but we keep suspecting that Har Sinai may also be significant chronologically. So he's telling us Har Sinai is when Moshe goes up the second time, when Moshe prays after the Chet HaEgel, when the Am Yisrael are forgiven, and he succeeds that Aharon won't suffer from Hashmada. How does he succeed? Two of the sons stay alive. So therefore, those two sons become, as it were, as if they are the children of Moshe, because Moshe is the one who gives them life. And by the way, I just want to go back to what was bothering him. If you're going to say, like Rashi said, because he taught them Torah, he taught everybody Torah. So therefore, everyone should have been described as Moshe's children. So that's what, and again, I'm going to point out that when you have a difficult verse, everybody over here can start giving it, completely different interpretations. The Or HaChaim gives the same interpretation in 15. Verse 16. Chatam Sofer, ki b'yom diber Hashem Moshe bar Sinai, hoyu b'nei Aaron nodav aviyu, ki az nitchevu atzilei b'nei Yisrael mita, v'nitzlu b'zchut Aharon u'Moshe. V'achar kach kishinim shechu litkahein, meitu nodav aviyu b'chet'o shel Aharon, v'nitzlu elazar t'mar b'tfilo shel Moshe ki yadua. So he gives a little bit of a twist, although I'll say it's very, very similar. That Nadav and Avihu's death, according to this, has nothing to do with the Eish Zarah, which, by the way, is not so easy to say. Why is it not so easy to say? Because it says because they died because of an Eish Zarah. Unless you want to say that there's some kind of foreshadowing or there's some kind already of, of impudent behavior, which is already manifested back by Sinai, and therefore it's going to come out again, that they're going too far, they're acting on their own, and it's already some foreshadowing. But as I said, it is somewhat similar. Now let's read 17, the Chatam Sofer again, continuing. Ve'ele todot Aaron u'Moshe, v'od ma'ik ma'ash Hashem asu todotam b'yom shediber Hashem imo b'har Sinai. Why does it say specifically at Har Sinai? Now, this should be interesting. I can't say it's not a little convoluted, but it's interesting. And we'll see if you go for it or not. But as I said, it's certainly interesting. He's bothered again by why Har Sinai is being thrown into this discussion. The Yesh Lomar, Al Pish Masha Chazal, based on what Chazal say, Ki Masha Shavar Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom et Eluchot Hayakidei Sheyadunu Kipnuyim V'lo Ke'eshet Ish. Okay. Chag Shavuot is coming up. There are many elements of Chag Shavuot which describe the relationship between Am Yisrael and God as a marriage. They stand under the canopy, they get married, Chag Shavuot. If it is a marriage, what's the problem? That a couple of days later, they're sitting with the golden calf. So they're cheating with the best man or whatever else may be. The groom goes away a little bit, whatever. Although we have to keep in mind, the groom isn't Moshe, the groom is God. There's some kind of distance, there's some kind of fear, and next thing they're cheating. So if you want, you can describe the Luchot as the ring, and Moshe goes up to bring the ring down in order to solidify the marriage. By the way, even with the wedding, you have Erisin, you have Nisuin, you have two different parts of the wedding. You read the ketubah in the middle. In the olden days, this used to be really a break between the two. So over here we have the break. The first part is basically the initial vows. Moshe goes up to get the ring, comes back down, and what does he see? That they're cheating. So if they're cheating, what does he do? He breaks the luchot, which means he doesn't give over the ring. If he doesn't go over the ring, then they're not married. So if they're not married, they weren't cheating. Rather, they're not married, so then they're still single. And that's really what this Midrash Chatam Sofer quoted so far, is saying that Am Yisrael were still unattached. Now, after quoting this nice Midrash, he writes, V'tzarachian. That's not so simple. Miman of Shach. He goes either way. In itkatshu l'kadosh baruch b'kabbalat Moshe Rabbeinu, olav hasholom kein mamu il shvirat, Yekivan shekibel shaliach lekabbalah, harei kfar nitkadshu me'az. So now here's a little halacha that you may or may not know. Moshe, whose shaliach was he? Whose emissary was he? Was he an emissary of Am Yisrael or was he an emissary of God? By the way, that is a far more complicated question than you would think about, certainly not in first glance. As he's saying, so let's say he is the shaliach lekabbalah. Right, Moshe kibel Torah Misinai. Moshe receives it. If he's the Sheikh LeKabbalah, it means the second that God gives it to him, again, let's say a woman says, I'm appointing you a Shliach to go, I know it's not as romantic as getting married together under one chuppah, but let's say a man can go to a Shliach and say, go to this woman and give her the ring, say, Harei HaMekudeshet Lo B'Tabadzu. Right? And she accepts the ring. She's married to the first fellow. Let's say the woman sends a shliach and says, go and get the ring from him. And he gives the ring and says, Harei, he, mikadeshet li b'tavadzu. If this person, either he or her, is her shliach, the second they receive it, the marriage takes place. Of course, it's their shliach. So he says, I don't understand. If Moshe was a shliach of Am Yisrael, then the second that God gave him the luchot, Am Yisrael is already married. he continues. Ve'init kadshu ad shivi lahem, ve'ilonit kadshu ad shivi lahem aluchot, kidin shliach lahocha. And if they weren't married until they received the luchot, kidin shliach lahocha, im kain below shvirat aluchot, hayalam din pnuya b'shat asiyat ha'egel. He says, but if Moshe is a shliach of God to give it to them, he doesn't have to break it either, because they don't become married until they receive it. So it doesn't work retroactively. So he says, so why break the luchot? They weren't married yet. They didn't receive it yet. V'yesh lomar, deharei mevu'ar mefurash b'kol ha-midrashim. He goes, rather, it's very clear in lots of midrashim, she'aya lahem liYisrael din kimo na'arah murasa. They had a status of a girl who's engaged. V'na'ara avia mikabel kidusheha. And a girl of a certain age, when she's a na'ara, before she's, right? And it says, if she's a na'ara, then her father could accept kedushin for him. V'imkein yesh lomer Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha'shalom lo ha'ilo din shliach klal. He didn't have the status of a shliach, Elodin Av Hamakabil Kedushe Libito. Kedushin Libito. Rather, the status of a father accepting the marriage for his daughter. Umasha Nikra Aviyam, and the fact he's called their father, who Hawilvili made Imam Torah. How does he have the status of father? Because he taught them Torah. Nimtza, Yisro Makabimeno Luchot, Vilamdim Torato, Arehu Aviyam. If Am Yisrael received the Luchot and he teaches them Torah, then he is their father. L'mafreya miyom har Sinai, back from har Sinai. Vavle kibat shekibela via kedush. And then she becomes, they become like the daughter who receives the kedush from the father. Al kain shiber haLuchot, therefore he broke the Luchot. V'kivin shelo kiblu mimenu lo nase aviyim. Because they didn't receive it, he's not their father. L'mafreya, working retroactively. And therefore, as if they're saying, "Va'asi shaper, va'ti shaper," and everything makes sense. Nimtze lefize, afal pi she'emet ki Moshe ben Avsham hu avim shalkol klal Yisrael, yidei shlamadi imam Torah. Even though it's true that Moshe has the status of the father of all of Am Yisrael, because he did teach them Torah, mikol makom, nonetheless, lo nasu avim miyom har Sinai. It wasn't from Mount Sinai. Ki al kein shavar luchot li natzel miza. That's why he broke luchot. Ach naase aviyim achar kach mipsol luchot ve'elech. At which point has become their father, as it were, from the point he makes the new luchot. Ma she'ein kein b'nei Aaron, but regarding the children of Aaron, shelo hayalam chelak be'egel, because they didn't sin with the egel, lo nitzbatel kabbalatam haTorah me'az. It was not canceled retroactively regarding them. And therefore, he was their father from the time that the Torah was given to Moshe at Sinai. Now, all that I'm going to point out over here, that, first of all, it's typical for an Achron. You saw how complicated this was? He took something which is very, fairly simple, made it very, very complicated, threw halacha into it, right? Made the whole thing in terms of the laws of Kedushin and receiving and so on and so forth, and then attempts to solve the problem. I'm going to say again, the more complicated a verse is, the more varied commentaries you're going to have, and at the end of the day, this comes up as very, very interesting, but I'm not going to even get into the various questions that one could end up asking on it, because still, what about all of Shevet Levi, which he's going to touch afterwards, all of Shevet Levi, theoretically, and said, by the way, how many of the Jewish people actually sinned by the ego? 3,000 sinned. It's very bad. 3,000 sinned. What happened to 3,000? They die. But it doesn't mean that all of Am Yisrael sinned. You could say that the rest of them didn't protest. They didn't stop them. Whatever. It's a sin by omission, not by commission. And you could say all kinds of things. But it's still, when it really comes down to it, most of Am Yisrael accepted the Torah. Most of Am Yisrael were not involved in this. So again, I don't want to go so much further, but I just want to show you how hard different commentaries are working to try to explain this. Last thing for today will be the Alshech. Am namine katavnu l'malak yiritza kadosh baruch hu laharot b'chol mishpachot Yisrael shelo haya behem pisul k'chol asher katavnu v'ashe yirat mitat b'nei Aaron l'fnei Hashem halo yitma which means generally the point over here is of telling us the genealogy was to show the purity of Am Yisrael. Nevertheless, when you get to Bnei Aaron specifically, and you get the sin, and then therefore you get all the dirt, it's somewhat surprising. Kim Amramo Pasuk, Ach Lezot Yecharad Libi, V'Yeter Memkomo, She'amitat Nadav Aviyu Daber Kedivrei Midrash V'Mitargem, V'Ze Loshon Midrash. Titus HaRasha Nechnas LeBeit HaKodesh HaKdoshim V'Yatza B'Shalom. Titus, the wicked, the sinner, goes in and defiles the Holy of Holies, and he comes out okay. V'Nadav Aviyu Nechnasu LaKriv, V'Yatzu Srufim. They went in to try to serve God, and they get burnt. K'nei Inyan HaEshahu Lo Yakedei Chayav Et Roshan. That this fire must not have been won in order to punish them. Rabbi Elazar Amar she'al shahor halacha b'pnei rabban metu. That why did they die? They died because they taught a halacha in front of their teacher. Which, by the way, do all of you remember that's one of the interpretations in terms of why Nadav and Avihu die? It's very interesting. He does not say black and white what I'm about to say. What did Rashi say? Well, why are they called the children of Moshe? Because Moshe taught them Torah. So therefore, they are Moshe's students. What happens if Nadav and Avihu absolutely ignore Moshe and they don't ask him his opinion? They do things on their own. What happens then? What are they showing? That they don't consider themselves to be the children of... They don't consider themselves to be the students of Moshe. Which means that, again, part of the problem... There are a couple of times this takes place in the Chumash where the Torah doesn't tell you black and white what the sin was. The other one, by the way, is the hitting of the rock. We're not sure exactly what it is, and therefore we have like a dozen different interpretations, but at the end of the day, they heap every single sin on Moshe and Aaron imaginable. By another view, the same thing. It doesn't tell us exactly what they did wrong, so here, okay, it was by Harsina, because they didn't get married. They said, when will Moshe and Aaron die already? I'm just giving you some of the commentaries. One of the things is they didn't consult Moshe and Aaron, they acted on their own, which goes back to this brazen type of personality, and so on. But I just want to keep in mind, what have we been saying till now? That they're that Rashi said they're children of Moshe. Why? Because Moshe teaches them. So if Moshe teaches them, then as if they're his children. What happens if they're rejecting Moshe being their teacher? How can I say they rejected Moshe being their teacher? So that's this well-known opinion that they did not ask Moshe's opinion. Rather, they go on by themselves. So what happens at that point if they go themselves? Moshe's no longer their father, as it were. So it's very interesting then that this is the toldo to Moshe or Bahar Sinai. What happens afterwards? By the Ohel Moed. It's not just by the Ohel Moed. They die. They die then because now they're no longer the children of Moshe, as it were. Now, he's going to continue and say, but that's not the whole reason. That's not the whole story. And he's going to now combine together with what we've seen so far. So let's go back again. Skip a little bit further. Not of you, Nichnasu, right. Skip the next part, which is underlined. The ze amar de'u efoki eile todot Aaron Moshe klomi mityachasim aleim chashuvim gdolim kahem ve'efiv chan ze halohu b'yom diber Hashem Moshe bar Sinai v'hu kisham ne'amar v'yal Moshe v'Aaron v'nadu v'haviyu v'shivim mizeknei b'nei Yisrael. So now he goes, no, that's the, what does Bahar Sinai mean? Bahar Sinai means the day that Nadav and Aviyu went up as well. And again, I want to point out, look how many different interpretations we've had. What does it mean, Bahar Sinai? Is Bahar Sinai before Moshe goes up the first time? Is it while Moshe's up the first time? Is it before, when Moshe goes up the second time? Is it someplace in between? Is it any point before the Mishkan is built? All these different interpretations we've seen, but what does it mean, Bahar Sinai is? But he's going back to no. Nadav Nevi go up at that point. Why? He make hishveh otam HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe v'Aaron. That Nadav and Avihu seem to be equal to Moshe and Aaron at that point, which is why we can suspect that maybe they are the two who will one day take over. The Alkein who's karu kodem l'shivim zakein, when they even mentioned before the 70 elders. The gam lo hivsik bivav lomar vidnadav v'Avihu k'mov shivsik b'neim l'zakeinim. The gam kar makatov atzilei b'nei Yisrael. There, what does atzilei mean again? The noble. What does noble imply? The next in line. They're the nobility. They're the ones who should be taking over for Moshe and Aaron. He then continues and he says, and we're skipping to the very bottom, V'hu ki Nadav Aviyu nehersu lirot ulistakel biyoter v'netchayvu lamut. Lu lehu yitbarach amar shelo ratza la'arbev simchat bito v'niach hadavar al yom simchato ba'o hamoed. V'zeo omro tzilei lo shalach yado. the Midrash says, which he's quoting, that God did not want to destroy Matan Torah. Matan Torah is a happy time. They go up the mountain as next in line. They come down the mountain with a death sentence. That's basically what he's saying. Why not kill them on the spot? Because God says, I don't want to ruin Matan Torah. By the way, it's interesting. What does God then ruin instead? What does he ruin? He ruins Hakamat HaMishkan. He ruins the Chanukat HaMishkan. That does get ruined. I want to go back to the beginning and give you a very unsatisfying conclusion. The verse is difficult. What happens when a verse is difficult? I've said this 20 times today. You get all kinds of interpretations. There's no consensus over here. The one thing that no one said clearly, which I hinted at in the last source, it is possible that the fact that they went and tried to decide law on themselves, that they already thought, not just were they noble, and they were selected. I mean, that's the point. That's the problem of having a next in command, that he already takes leadership before it may be appropriate. They already feel a little too comfortable that they can eat and they can drink and they can look and they don't have a problem. They don't ask Moshe, they don't ask Aaron, and therefore they end up dying. So I'm saying, again, that may indicate this Rashi in the Gemara that says that. It's as if, because Moshe taught them Torah, as if he gave birth to them, as it were, it could be that they're rejecting Moshe, and they're rejecting their own father. Remember that as well. When other of you go in, they should have asked Moshe, but they also could have asked Aaron. They don't ask anybody. So in a sense, they're rejecting either that Moshe or Aaron are their parent in the sense that they need to listen to. So we're talking about a parent at Har Sinai, so therefore they end up not surviving. Along the way, we saw, as I said, every kind of interpretation. We saw that Moshe saved two of the kids. Which two of the kids? Okay, either Nadav Avihu or Eleazar of Itamar. Again, could be either way. We see people taking it back to Mount Sinai, Har Sinai. We see people connecting to the Egel, Tam Sofer. We see people connecting it to the building of the Mishkan and every step in between. When you have a difficult verse, you will have lots of interpretations. What do we need to do at the end of the day? Again, to be honest with ourselves, at the end of the day, we need to go back and to read into the Pasuk and see really two things. One, what reads best into this particular Pasuk, into this particular verse, and two, we have to look and what works within the larger context over here locally, you know, including the children of Amram being mentioned a little bit later, and finally looking how it fits into the Torah as a whole. There are three steps over there. I do suspect that this awkwardness that I raised earlier in terms of how many children does Aaron have is part of the issue over here. God speaking to Moshe seems to be a part of the issue as well. God speaking to Moshe, and therefore making Moshe the one who is the father, as it were, which the Chatam Sofer, you know, really did bring that out. Maybe a little too much, but he did bring that out very nicely, that Moshe becomes the father. So that's something which should have been recognized. With the realization that Nadav and Avihu may have had Oedipus issues, and they may have rejected both their father and their teacher and go off on their own and wanted to do things on their own, which actually leads to their demise, I think ends up becoming even a little bit more interesting and help explain the verse over here. But as I said to it, one verse, what do we see? Eight different interpretations? So you get to choose which one you like. Have a good week.